A fourth of an acre of Irish hillside now tilts on the tip of Manhattan overlooking the Statue of Liberty in Ellis Island. A path winds past a ruined cottage and walls, brought stone by stone from County Mayo through a field planted with nettles, foxglove, and empty potato furrows to a pilgrim standing stone. The Irish Hunger Memorial Park was dedicated this week by New York Governor George Pataki and Irish President Mary McAleese. The park commemorates the Great Hunger, as it's called, that began with the potato blight in 1845 that turned the potato crop millions of Irish farm families needed to eat into what was called a black decaying mass of rottenness. Over the next decade, as many as 1 million people starved and died of disease. Millions more left Ireland and made new lives in Britain, Canada, and the United States. Maureen Murphy is a historian for the memorial. She is also director of the New York State Great Irish Famine Curriculum and a professor at Hofstra University. She joins us from our studios in New York. Ms. Murphy, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
The Irish name for the famine, of course, is the Great Hunger.
An Gortha Mór.
Well, and help us understand that phrase, if you could.
It means simply the large hunger. And what distinguished it from other famines, and they happened periodically, was that the potato crop failed not once, but 4 times in 5 years. And it was, of course, the only source of food for most of the poor agricultural laborers and small farmers with farms under 5 acres.
Mm-hmm. It was an earlier time. It was not as easy to get aid to people. But is that the reason why 1 million people died, or were there other factors?
There were a combination of things. There was a government laissez-faire economics, an unwillingness to interfere with the market economy in agriculture. And then when they did turn things around, it took a long time for them to get an appropriate relief system in place. The Quakers stepped in 1846 with the help of Americans and English private citizens, mm-hmm. and were very generous in creating soup shops. And the government picked those up in 1847, but by then it was very, very late. It was also bureaucracy, what we see today in Africa, where it takes time to get the food out. Sometimes it has to be bagged. Sometimes it has to be recorded in various ways. Local politicians decide how it's to be given out. There are all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. The famine was one of the most storied events of the time, literally so, history, proverbs, mm-hmm, poem, mm-hmm. And in fact, some songs.
Yes.
Could we get you to talk about the famine song?
Yes. There's a famine song. It goes, "Oh, the praties, they grow small over here, over here. Oh, the praties, they grow small over here.
Oh, the praties, they are small, and we dig them in the fall, and we eat them coats and all.
The average Irish workman ate 14 pounds of potatoes.
When you say 14 pounds, is that 14 pounds a week?
14 pounds a day. The workmen before the famine, they lived on 14 pounds of potatoes. Women ate 10 to 12, and children about 5 pounds of potatoes, boiled. The Irish word for cooking is bricha, which is boil. Mm. And they say when we eat them coats and all, they were eating the skins, which were, you know, the part that were given to the animals to feed the pigs. And, of course, it was the pig that was sold and gave them the little bit of cash that they had to pay their rent, to perhaps buy an article of clothing, to perhaps buy some additional stock. And mm-hmm. when they lost the potato, they had to use their resources to buy food. And that's, again, one of the things we see in world hunger today, people having to use their resources. They sell everything possible. People say to us, why didn't the Irish fish? You know, they had all of this water around them. Why didn't they fish? And they pawned their nets. They pawned their boats.
If I might try and sharpen this a bit, I mean, the United Kingdom is the great friend of the United States today, but mm-hmm. I know in my family, and I suspect in a number of others, mm-hmm. people with Irish ancestry, there's still real bitterness towards what was considered to be the insensitivity of the British mm-hmm. government.
Yes, it was. And in fact, the Prime Minister, Tony Blair, during the commemoration of the 150th anniversary of the Great Irish Famine, regretted on behalf of the government at the time that the wealthiest nation in the world did not regard their fellow citizens and come to their aid. And I think it's a lesson for us today. How do governments respond? to their people in this kind of crisis. And famine, you know, it doesn't happen like an earthquake. Yeah. Famine we can see. If we're reading the papers today, we read about about South Africa and the famine coming. We see it creeping along like drought. It doesn't come on us by surprise.
And why is it particularly appropriate to have such a memorial in New York City?
Well, in part, of course, because the Great Irish Famine really changed the course of New York and changed the course of world history and American history. And there was, of course, a tremendous contribution made by Irish and the Irish Americans here, as all immigrants indeed. The famine didn't start immigration. It accelerated it. Remember that the Erie Canal was built in the 1820s, and many people came over and settled along the canal route, and they were in America and were able, in many cases, to help their neighbors and friends at home emigrate during the famine. And they were extraordinary in the amount of aid they sent back. These are people who were, you know, day laborers, domestic servants, and they sent an extraordinary amount of money home to help.
You know, I think a great many people in North America think of a lot of the Irish migration as a, if I might use this word very carefully, a happy event in our history over here, and sometimes lose sight of the fact that it, in fact, was the outgrowth of a tragedy. There's another song we want to ask you about, Thousands Are Sailing.
Yes. Thousands Are Sailing is an immigration song. Its verses talk about the heartbreak of emigration. And there's one stanza, "Oh, I pity the mother who rears up the child, and likewise the father who labors and toils. To try to support them, they work night and day, and when they are reared up, they're going away.
I pray stand a moment and listen to me. Your sons and fair daughters are now going away, and thousands are sailing to America. So good luck to those people, and safe may they land. They are leaving their country for a far distant strand. They are leaving old Ireland, no longer can stay. And thousands are sailing to America."
Between 1882 and 1908, 310,000 Irish girls came through the port of New York. 310,000. You can imagine that kind of loss. Even into the 60s, when I was a student learning Irish and talking to little kids, I'd ask them what they wanted to do when they grew up, and little tiny kids would say to me, "Be me dul go America, I'm going to America." An old lady one time on the road asked me where was I going back to school, and I said, yes, I was going back. And she said, I said to her, "Coach, were you ever in Dublin?" We were speaking Irish together. And she said, "Ach, niro me co fadashin, ach vi me America. I was never that far, but I've been to America."
Ms. Murphy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Maureen Murphy, historian for the Irish Hunger Memorial, which opened this week in New York City. She's a professor of teaching and curriculum at Hofstra University.
So good luck to those people, and safe may they land. They are leaving their country for a far distant strand. They are leaving old Ireland, no longer can stay.